Governor Mills has now rejected the waiver that was granted to her predecessor's administration that would have allowed the state to impose some work or volunteer requirements on Medicaid recipients.
She has taken this position, initially said that she was reviewing it, and now is basically saying, you know, is siding with the progressive advocates who see this work requirement as being particularly harmful to people who would receive Medicaid insurance. And so what that has done is it's prompted immediate criticism from the right. And it's worth noting that even in the state legislature, which has been relatively quiet, I think Republicans here are trying to find their footing after some pretty devastating election losses. Well, they have now rallied around this particular issue and have issued statements criticizing her for rejecting this initiative and not, you know, going forward with this waiver. And of course, that has also brought out her predecessor, Governor Paul LePage, who is alive and well on Twitter. He has a new handle. He put out a statement on Monday night criticizing Governor Mills for taking this action, essentially saying that he continues to watch and be disappointed in the actions that she's taken.
And that's really unusual for previous Maine governors. I mean, I've been here 40 years, and I don't ever remember hearing a prior governor say a bad word about their successor or their successor's policies.
That's exactly right. Governors are kind of like presidents, right, where they just sort of, once their two terms are up, they sort of fade out of public view, maybe publish a book or open up a library or something like that. There's sort of like this unwritten code of conduct where you don't criticize the person who succeeded you. But Governor LePage has not followed any rules, really, of those type of rules. He's busted a lot of norms over the 8 years that he was here. And so why not this one, I suppose? And, you know, it's interesting, too, that because that he's taken these steps, I mean, he's getting a lot of blowback on Twitter from liberal Twitter users, but he's also received some positive feedback from conservatives, too. And, you know, conservatives in Maine are, I think they maybe see, you know, Governor LePage as sort of this oracle to a time when things were going much better for them, and they're not going so well right now. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that's why his message is received so well by conservatives.
The governor or her staff at all concerned about this, about the fact that they may have to deal with LePage and LePage's utterances as they move forward here?
No, I mean, I haven't expressed any concern. It is interesting. I've noticed that when members of the press retweet or share Governor LePage's missives on Twitter, the reaction is why are you even paying attention to this guy? You know, he lives in Florida. He's effectively a snowbird. You know, he doesn't have a residence in Maine. Just pretend he doesn't exist. That's a hard thing, I think, for the press to do, because LePage has always garnered press attention, and also because of the very reasons we just outlined, which is that it's so unusual for a former governor to come in and be so critical. So, you know, this is pure speculation, but I think Mills's people are perhaps hoping the novelty of LePage chiming in on various initiatives of hers will just sort of wear off, and that he will effectively fade into whatever he wants to do in Florida. We'll see how that shakes out, and whether or not it becomes more active here. I mean, he's already announced that he would like to lead an initiative to repeal ranked choice voting. I mean, I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but he's announced that he wants to do that. And he continues to call in to conservative radio stations. He literally called in poolside from Florida just last week.
It's a little chilly. It's about 65.
He still has an interest. He's still watching. I guess the question remains is whether or not he continues to be interested, and whether people here continue to be interested in what he has to say.
Yeah, but this time of year, of course, calling from poolside is not going to endear you to, I don't think, to many Mainers, conservatives or otherwise.
No, he might make more enemies, actually, right? Doing that, rubbing it in, as it were.
Governor Mills has also named as an advisor Donald Loring, former police chief of the Penobscot Nation. Her opening salvo, I guess, in trying to forge better relationships with Maine's tribes. So this has been a challenge for Maine governors for a while.
And it was a challenge for Governor Mills in particular when she was attorney general for the state. There was a lot of litigation that involved the state, and the tribes, for instance, over water rights in the Penobscot River. And Governor Mills has made a concerted effort to reach out to the tribes. I mean, she did this during the campaign to try to get them to, you know, sort of ease off some of the criticism of her and just by opening a line of communication with them. It's also worth noting that Donna Loring was the author of a letter in the Portland Press Herald during the campaign that said basically, let's give Mills a chance if she's elected governor, you know, and we should support her in her candidacy. And so it wasn't terribly a surprise that Governor Mills would appoint her as a senior advisor on tribal affairs. What's also interesting about that appointment is the timing of it. Next week, Governor Mills' pick to lead the Department of Environmental Protection, Jerry Reed, his confirmation hearing is before the legislature next week. Now, Jerry Reed is the assistant attorney general, and he was the one who led on this litigation on Penobscot water rights. So potentially the timing of this announcement by Governor Mills could be viewed as an effort to sort of neutralize what is expected to be tribal opposition to Jerry Reed's appointment. And we'll see if that actually bears out the way perhaps she hopes it will.
So let's talk a little bit about some of these issues that are involved, starting with the water rights case. What is going on there that's divided the state from the tribes?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fundamental tension is whether or not the tribe's jurisdiction includes the Penobscot River, or as the state asserts, just the land and the islands near the reservation. And so that has been the central tension. And, you know, the state has effectively said that the water belongs to the state and the tribes see it much differently. And this has to deal with sustenance fishing in the river. Mm-hmm. The tribes have a different view of what they should be able to take from there versus what the state does. We had an interview with Mills where she said that she really hoped that the tribes and the state could start to partner on water issues, especially as they relate to potential rollbacks of pollution protections by the federal EPA. So she's just really, I think, sort of hopeful that there are ways that she and the tribes can open up a line of communication, which was effectively closed during the LePage administration, and perhaps slowly start to ease some of these tensions that have gone on for years. That is what she is trying to do. I mean, she's taken some obviously concrete steps to try to do that. We just have to sort of wait and see whether or not those steps will be successful.
And the governor is also planning to kind of round out her appointments by naming someone to an office that will attempt to deal with the opioid crisis. Beyond making an appointment, what other initiatives has the governor talked about to try to get a handle on this?
She's reached out to various stakeholders in this problem, whether it's law enforcement, treatment and prevention community, and healthcare advocates, you name it. Her idea is to sort of gather all the best minds and use this director of opioid response to sort of consolidate and draft basically a unified and comprehensive response to this. She wants to increase access to Narcan, which is the drug that reverses an overdose. This has been an initiative that she pursued as the attorney general. But she's also indicated that she wants to make sure that there's more funding for treatment and prevention. Now, that will cost money, so it may be a budget initiative, which we won't see until the first week of February. Her initiatives to deal with the opioid crisis will be embedded in that two-year budget document because it will cost money to deal with this problem, and therefore, you know, spending initiatives will be in the budget.